Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Donna M. Orange. She's author of Climate Crisis, Psychoanalysis, and Radical Ethics. And today is one of our environmental awareness shows. So, linking climate justice to radical ethics by way of psychoanalysis, Donna Orange explains many relevant aspects of psychoanalytic expertise, referring to the work on trauma, mourning, and the transformation of trouble into purpose. Donna makes practical suggestions for action in the psychoanalytic and psychotherapeutic communities, reducing air travel, consolidating organizations and conferences, and better use of internet communication and education. This book includes both philosophical considerations of egoism, close to psychoanalytic narcissism, as problematic, together with the work on shame and envy as motivating compulsive and conspicuous consumption. Donna is a psychoanalyst and philosopher living in California. She teaches at NYU postdoctoral program and the Institute for Psychoanalytic Study of Subjectivity, New York. Her books also include Thinking for Clinicians, The Suffering Stranger, and most recently, Nourishing the Inner Life of Clinicians and Humanitarians. You can find out more about Donna, her books, and her work by visiting her website, which is donnamorange.net. That's donnamorange.net. And I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. So that, I'd like to welcome Donna to the show. Good day, Donna.
Well, hello, and good day to you. This is that was quite an introduction. Thank you ever so much.
Well, I'm sure that was just the tip of your iceberg. I actually went to your website and looked at your CV. So I mean,
if we can even begin to unpack that to make it sort of user friendly, we will have done our job, I think.
I think so. Okay, well, let's first of all start with, I've done a lot of shows on environmental awareness, and it's really, I started them about 3 years ago.
And, oh, that's great.
I've actually never thought of putting climate crisis and psychoanalysis together. So.
Well, I'm not surprised. Because that's why I had to work on it, because it hasn't been done. And I'm kind of calling out my colleagues on their resounding silence on this topic.
So it's
our common home that is going down with the climate crisis.
Yeah. So now, what do you feel? I mean, when I think of psychoanalysis, I tend to think of work with an individual, you know, kind of helping individuals working through trauma and that kind of thing. So how does it translate on the more global scale of climate crisis?
Well, probably the central psychoanalytic idea is the idea of unconsciousness. That we are motivated by things that we're not much aware of, and that we have reasons that we're not aware of those things, that we don't want to be. And those, almost every psychoanalytic theory and every psychoanalytic treatment helps us to become more aware of what we've been hiding from ourselves so that we stop messing up our lives so much. And when you think about what we do as a society, as a culture, as a world, we could easily think about the ways in which we are hiding from ourselves the consciousness of the climate emergency and of the way in which it's already becoming so serious, and so much faster it's becoming serious than most of us recognize, because we don't live in the deserts where people are starving, or in the places that are already being drowned and people are having to move because you can't live there anymore.
Yeah. So would you say then that we have an environmental unconscious? I mean, that there's...
That's exactly what I say in the book.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
You're getting it.
and is this something that has just been kind of etched in our psyche for a long period of time, that it's one of those things that, you know, we have to, you know, just each individual has to kind of tap into that unconscious and bring the awareness up?
Well, yes and no. I think that it is a product of some other things, and especially of two things, perhaps. One of an egoism that is individualistic, where we're born into a system of thinking that what I want matters, and that I have to have what I want now, and no matter what it's going to cost you, that I should have what I want. And no matter whether how other people will be oppressed, for example, by my carbon-hungry life, you know, carbon-consuming life. And
right.
So one is a completely individualistic mindset that we in the Western and developed world have had for centuries. And then the other one is that we have this legacy of living like that that has dominated and taken the land of other people. Colonialism, whether it's the Europeans taking Africa or Europeans taking the lands of Canada and the United States and New Zealand and Australia and so on, that we think that we own these places, but we stole them. And we're so used to just taking and not paying any attention to how it affects the people that we take from, that we've developed a habit of being unconscious about that kind of thing, not to mention slavery. That's an additional thing that we don't want to know about.
Yeah.
So all of that legacy keeps us unconscious about the climate crisis.
Yeah. So now, with this egoism, and I noticed you said Western cultures, so the Eastern cultures tend to have less a less of a focus that doesn't seem to be as intense as in the Eastern philosophy.
Well, if you think about the Eastern religions and the Eastern cultures, they tend to be much more communitarian.
Mm-hmm.
The Africans talk about Ubuntu, where the good of one is the good of all, and all that kind of thing. That the kind of individualism that where if it's good for me and my family, then I'll vote for it, is very, very much more typical of the Western cultures. That it's very, very hard for politicians, for example, to persuade us to vote for things that are going to be for the common good or for the good of our children and grandchildren.
Yeah, we're really experiencing a lot of that you know, right now, some real challenges.
Yeah, yes, I wasn't going to go into the there, but you
we
can
won't
do
go
that
there
if you want.
Not necessarily yet, but the fact is, you know, one of the things that it strikes me, you know, when I, you know, I see the backward motion that we're kind of making in a lot of the areas that you talk about in your book as solutions, it seems to me that that is like an awareness generator on steroids. You know what I mean? It seems like it's really motivating people who may have just been lethargic and kind of letting things go, you know, as the way that they have been.
Yes. It is remarkable that a lot of people are starting to wake up and see that a lot of these things are connected, that climate and discrimination and, you know, a lot of the social justice things and wars and immigration and climate, that all of these things are closely and intricately related to each other.
Yeah. Now, in your book, you talk a little bit about the culture of narcissism, and you mention the egoism as close to psychoanalytic narcissism. So, what's the defining line? Where does it kind of tip over into it? Because this, you know, when I see today's society and all of the attention to self, I mean, and it's just everywhere. And the kids in particular are, you know, now, I mean, they're, you know, the patterns of behaviors are being established right now, and they're like right there, and with, you know, narcissistic tendencies. So how do we confront, or, you know, first of all, you know, is there really a rising issue of narcissism? And, you know, is there something that maybe we can do to maybe stem the rise?
Well, I mean, these are all important questions. I mean, one is that that narcissism as a sort of psychological question has to do with how we experience ourselves. And when we experience ourselves as sort of fragile, we behave narcissistically. We don't think about other people at all. And we want more and more things that prove that we're important and special, like a bigger house and a bigger car and so on and so on, and more evidence that we are important and special. We call this narcissistic behavior, but it comes out of actually a personal fragility. People who are personally strong and robust have lots of capacity to care about other people, and that's
okay.
So narcissism is a psychological thing, actually is the opposite of what it seems to be. It looks big and overwhelming because it overwhelms other people, but it comes out of personal weakness, actually. Whereas egoism is also a philosophy that says we are simply individuals. And Margaret Thatcher famously proclaimed that there is no such thing as society. We are only a collection of individuals. And that's a philosophy that goes with narcissism that says that we have no responsibility for each other. Because we are not ultimately connected to each other. We're just individuals.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, when you say, what do we do about this? I think people who believe that we really are connected to each other have to start behaving that way and showing their children how to do it. So if you want your children to read books, you read books to them. From the time they're 2 years old. If you want your children to ride bicycles instead of always driving everywhere, you ride bikes with your kids. If you want your children to be related to and caring for other people, you show them how to do that. And you take them with you when you go work at the food bank. You know, you teach them how to care for others. So, I mean, I think it's on the adults to teach the children.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that, you know, that makes sense. You know, I mean, the whole, you know, modeling aspect of mm-hmm. behavior, you know, to be able to do that. So now, egoism was one of the aspects, but also the other was monism, is that correct?
Monism is the philosophy that goes with that. Monism is the idea that we are in just individuals. The philosopher Leibniz said that we are windowless monads. That is, that we can't even perceive the emotional life of the other person. That we are so self-enclosed. Well, I don't believe that. I believe that human beings are capable of empathy and capable of care for each other. You know, but the thing is, we act as if that's not the case. You know, when a lot of our government is organized as if we have no care and no responsibility for the other beyond our most immediate family, for example.
Yeah.
So it really, it requires us really to start thinking about what is basic in our view of our society, of each other, of our responsibilities, and so on. And that's what I mean about radical ethics. What's really basic?
Yeah. And, you know, when I read that, you know, about my other's keeper.
Oh, yeah.
Radical ethics. I thought, now, when did we ever get to the point where that was radical, you know, ethics? I mean, you know, it's... to me, it's stunning, you know, because...
But it is stunning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that should not be radical, but you know that it is.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's something that, you know, we really kind of need to focus. I do want to let listeners know that if you have any questions that you would like to ask Donna, we're going to take a break in a few minutes. You can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to type them in and we'll get to them right after the break. So now with the monism and egoism, how have your psychoanalytic and psychotherapeutic peers, do they feel that do you feel that there needs to be a change in an approach to recognizing, bringing more in, you know, the bigger picture, so to speak?
Well, it's interesting what the response has been so far from my psychotherapeutic and psychoanalytic peers. A lot of them are kind of surprised to be hearing that this should have something to do with them, that the earth is burning up and that the polar ice caps are melting and that everything is, you know, changing so very rapidly. I mean, just yesterday we got the news that Greenland has a big split down the middle of it now, that is probably because there's warm water underneath it now. But once they kind of get over thinking then they have to say, well, but my job is to work with one person at a time and to pay attention to the suffering of that person. And I say a couple of things to them. Of course, if you do well with that, the person, many of your patients will become more capable of caring about other people and caring about the larger world. That's one thing for sure. But we already knew that. The thing that we're having to realize now, and I think it's become really clear to us in these last 4 or 5 months, is that we are both psychotherapists and citizens, and we have to be both at the same time. We don't get to be one or the other. I can't tell you how many thousands of psychoanalysts and psychotherapists participated in those women's marches the day after the inauguration. A lot of my colleagues were out with a group that was called Shrinks for Sanity.
Okay. I like
that. And they're involved in women's issues. They're involved in climate now, although still climate seems to be the slowest one for them to take up. But there's a wonderful group in England called the Climate Psychology Alliance, and anybody can Google them and find their website. I've met a number of these people. They're just wonderful. But it hasn't taken hold in this country so much yet. But I spoke last week to 100 psychotherapists in Toronto, and they were spellbound. They were fascinated by all of this. And
wow.
So I think that my colleagues are getting really ready to take this on.
Yeah. Well, this is great. I mean, you know, because they, you folks work with so many people who are, you know, when it comes to, you know, social injustice, you know, those who are have economic inequality, that kind of thing. You know, that's a very that would be large in your population, but those are also people who are very much affected too. You know, by
absolutely,
so many
of our patients and clients are suffering from from social injustice. They've been raped. They've been children of child abuse. Many of them are immigrants. There are lots of people who are suffering from things that are related to the climate problem and various forms of social injustice and child neglect and abuse, that we just need to start seeing these things as all connected to each other and having the conversations about how these things are all connected.
Yeah, you know, and to do it without judgment.
Absolutely.
To me, it just seems that, you know, once we kind of remove that from, you know, positions and just open up the mind, then, you know, it's going to be easier to think. We're going to take just a quick break, Donna.
Sure,
And then we'll be right back. Okay, everyone
stay
tuned.
I'll be right here.
We'll be right back. Okay, great. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there, or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc., and we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide: books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. There is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Donna M. Orange, and we're talking about her new book, Climate Crisis, Psychoanalysis and Radical Ethics. And again, you can find out more about Donna, her other books, by visiting her website, which is donnamorange.net, and that's D-O-N-N-A-M-Orange. www.brenda.orange.net, and I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. Okay, so with that, we're back, Donna.
Okay, I'm here.
Okay, great. Well, before we start, I do have a caller, and her name is Goffinay McLaren, and Goffinay is actually the reason, the motivating reason that I started my environmental awareness shows years ago. She is a tireless advocate for raising awareness about plastic pollution in the oceans.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, has written a children's book called Sully Saves the Seas. It's a great little children's book. And you know, she was also at that march. So,
okay.
But, yeah, but anyway, she has a comment. Anyway, so hello, Goffinay.
Yeah, hello there, Robert. Lovely to talk to you. Hello, Donna.
Hello, Goffinay. I'm really happy to meet you. Where are you located?
Well, I'm just not very far from Robert, actually, just down the road a little bit.
Okay.
I'm actually hearing myself.
Oh, okay.
I'm actually hearing myself on the show.
Okay.
So
you might want to walk away from there.
Can we just ignore that?
Yeah, or walk away a little bit.
Oh, walk away from the – okay, I'll do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, Donna, here I am, and I'm very, very interested in your comments about parents teaching children.
Yes.
Which, of course, is very, very important and I think was true for a long, long time. But in my experience with plastic in the ocean
mm-hmm.
and finding a lot of plastic on the beach, when I approach a family to ask them to remember to take home their trash, it's the children that prick up their ears when I
yes.
say a turtle could be hurt or a bird could be
yes.
hurt by a plastic bag. And the parents actually sort of shoo me away as if to say, you know, well, go away, lady. We don't want to hear from you today. And I have noticed that there are so many children's organizations popping up with children taking action, like this group, Our Children's Trust, who are suing the
yes.
federal government. And
yes,
the
they're in Oregon,
industry.
I think. Yes.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And this little boy, this 16-year-old boy, Shutes Kot, the little Aztec boy,
mm-hmm.
who would really put me to shame. He's so articulate and so well-spoken and so well-versed in everything he's saying. So I'm pinning my hopes for the future, both with plastic in the ocean and with climate change, on our younger generations taking governmental action.
Well, you know what?
Action.
I think you're probably right to do that. I think that the thing is that we have to get to everybody we can. The situation
yeah.
is so bad already that.
Yeah.
If you can get to elders, and I am now among them, definitely.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
And or if we can get to children or, you know, young people, anybody that we can. The thing is that the people that are the hardest, I was talking recently with some college students who say they have a terrible time getting to their own parents about this, just
mm-hmm.
sort of the way
mm-hmm.
you were talking about just
mm-hmm,
now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But what I tell them is do what you can and get to your peers, get to everybody you can. Your own family will be the hardest to convert. That's just
mm-hmm.
going to be the deal.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that each one of us has to find what we can do, you're an expert on the plastics problem. Somebody else is going to be an expert on fracking, and you know,
yes.
and somebody
yes.
else is going to know about petrochemicals, and somebody else is going to know
uh-huh.
about something else. And everyone, but here in where I live, it's saving every drop of water. The
right.
I think that we each have to pick the thing we can do. And then find who we can reach about it. But it is interesting that the kids at this college that I were after a while, they looked at me and they said, "And why are you so interested in this? You're going to be dead when all of these bad things happen."
I feel that way too, but what I do, I'm doing it for the future generations.
Well, that's what I did. I said, I looked them right in the eye and I said, "I am required to do this for you. You're right, I'm going to be dead." They went silent. They realized that they have to absorb this, what I'm able to do for them, they have to absorb it and take it and run with it, you know, because I am so convinced that they are not going to have a livable planet by anywhere near when they're my age. It's a true emergency, and I can hear in your voice that you know that too.
Oh, I totally agree with you, and I think also, and I probably shouldn't talk politics on the radio, but with this current administration, I think it's just going to be so difficult because they're bought and sold by the agencies that are supposed to be protecting. The public are bought and sold by different big corporations.
Yes.
So, it's going to be extra hard.
It is going to be extra hard, and it means that we need more determination. Here in California, what's happened in the last 3 or 4 months is that the state has enacted more environmental regulations, and there's been more solar and wind power put in a way of countering what's happening in Washington. Like everybody's got to get more determined.
Yes, well, California
because we're getting no help from Washington right now.
No, not right now, but let's hope that that common sense will prevail, and there may be a change of attitude. Well,
I don't know about hope, but we've got
to
have determination.
Well,
I'm sorry,
we've got that. I think,
yeah.
Okay, well, Donna, lovely to talk to you, and I don't want to take up more of your time.
No,
so I'll get back to the radio. And
yeah, well, thank
you
so much.
Lots of luck, and I'll be buying your book. Yes. Thanks, Robert.
Thank
you. Yes. Well, that was a lovely conversation.
Yes, it was. And she's told me before, Goffinay does a lot of the beach walks.
Yes.
And does that, and particularly when the loggerhead turtles are nesting and that kind of thing.
Yes.
In South Carolina. And, and she tells me about that often. And it seems in a way that, we were talking about parents modeling behavior for the children. It seems like maybe it's a little parenting up in a way where
Absolutely.
The children have modeled behavior.
Absolutely. It can go both ways.
Yeah, very much. Well, now we're kind of down to about the last 10 minutes here. So I like practicality. And in your book, you have practical suggestions for action.
Yes.
So if we could maybe share some actions for those in your community, the psychoanalytic and therapeutic communities.
Yes. Well, what I suggest in the book and what just for getting started is that we do as much as we can of our communicating online so that we don't fly as much and so that we enact what we're talking about being carbon friendly, that we be like the parents. I'm saying don't tell your children, show them, ride your bicycle to your office instead of and you don't have to say anything about it to your patients, but pretty soon they'll ask you, "What's up with you riding your bike to your office?" and so on. That's one thing. But I think the more important thing, and I've been thinking about this a lot lately, is that nobody can do everything. This problem is way too big for any of us to take on by ourselves. It's overwhelming, in fact. But everybody can do something. And everybody can take that some part of this problem and learn everything you can about it. whether it's water or whether it's, electrical vehicles,
yeah,
or whether it's fracking or plastics or whatever it is, that there are so many pieces of this problem. And you can learn everything you can about it and then start lobbying like crazy on that and talking with people about it. You don't have to be a pain in the you-know-what about it.
Uh-huh.
But what you do have to do is try to get people into conversations and get them to tell you what they care about with climate, you know, because...
Yeah.
We can't all do it. It's so big.
Mm-mm.
But we all have to do something.
Yeah, we know, as far as the learning a particular area, you know, with each of us, wherever we are located geographically, there's many times, you know, something that is real specific to our area.
Mm-hmm.
So when, you know, if we were to become very versed in something that affects our community directly,
mm-hmm,
you know, and affects the bottom line, you know,
yes,
you know, that kind of thing, then, you know, we can, that in itself then can help motivate, you know, the village to be able to at least discuss, you know, whatever the issues are. And then, you know, and you're right, you know, listening is just so important. Right now, I think so many people are just shouting at each other.
Yeah.
And we just, you know, we just kind of missed the boat. I mean, we don't get to understand. Now, there are other people on the opposite side of the political spectrum that I just cannot understand. But that's okay.
Yeah.
I don't
know.
No,
and I have the same problem. I mean, I think we all do. Right now, things are have come to a point where this is a big problem that we can't understand. But what we can do is try to just sort of determinedly work for the values of community, for the values of saving our earth in the way that so that our children and grandchildren will have a livable place to live. And so that the poorest people in this on this earth, you know, so that we value them. We can't pretend that, I mean, we are pretending that their lives don't matter.
Yeah.
And it's terrible to live as if thousands and millions of lives don't matter.
I know it. And you know, the one good thing about the internet and you know, kind
mm-hmm.
of global communication is that, you know, we're able to get pictures of, you know, things that happen to people, you know, that so and some of our kids may even know other kids from those areas, so they're less likely to want to harm, you know, their friends, you know, and, you know, and that kind of thing is going to be good. Now, with Earth Day coming up this Saturday, it's an excellent time, really, isn't it, to really do something. There should be plenty of activities going on in your neighborhood to become involved with and get out and meet people and do something positive.
Well, you know, even if you have a little event to make signs for an Earth Day march, it means that everybody's thinking about why this is important, why it matters.
Mm-hmm.
Why does it matter enough to get out and march? And what do I want to say that I hope some TV camera might see on my sign? Or that I want to say about this? It means that doing this not only is in solidarity with other people, but it requires us all to be reflective about why it matters to us.
Yeah.
And we can talk with each other about why we're writing what on our sign, what we're writing. And we can bring humor to it. we can, you know, all kinds of, you know, this is often a place for some very serious humor.
Yeah.
Is these marches. I think this march on the 29th, I think it is, that's the big climate march. That should be as big as the one was on the day after the inauguration.
Yeah, I agree. It should be. You know, and just creating that environment of making signs and bringing people together, that in itself generates discussion and camaraderie.
Yes.
And you can listen to each other and get different points of view. And you know, and I think it's just once you get, you know, someone's point of view, you begin to recognize that interconnectedness, you know, that
yes.
what you find is important is exactly what I find is important, which is what Sally finds is important.
Yes. So you can invite your friends and neighbors and colleagues and family to go to the march with you and to make signs with you and maybe to get to the march in some kind of climate-friendly way by public transportation or by ride-sharing or something. And all of this feeds into an awareness about this. And it communicates to the politicians that a lot of people care.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what, you know, brings, that's what raises, that's what gets their attention. You know,
yes.
that's what we need to do. Well, Donna, I really appreciate your time today. This has really been a fascinating discussion, and I really want to thank you.
Well, I want to thank you.
You're welcome. You're very welcome. And now, again, people can find you on DonnaMOrange.net. And are you on any social media, or is that something you...
I actually am on Twitter, although I don't do it very much because it takes up so much time.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and
but
follow you
anyway.
But they
can find me on Twitter.
Okay.
I'm going
to follow you anyway. All right. Thanks again for your time.
Well, thank you so much. Bye now.
My pleasure. Again, today, everyone, my very special guest has been Donna M. Orange, and she is author of Climate Crisis, Psychoanalysis, and Radical Ethics. And again, you can find out more by visiting her website, which is DonnaMOrange.net. That's DonnaMOrange.net. And again, I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's BITERADIO.ME. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.